Have you ever had one of those mornings where you just wake up and you choose to say, today is going to be a no shame day? A no shame day in the sense of that you're just going to eat whatever you want. So on your way to work, you drive through Yummies and you pick up a dozen donuts because you just can't decide which one you really want. And you think, man, I'll get a dozen because I'll share it with at the office and I'll be the hero. And what you realize is that by the time you get to the parking lot and you're ready to get out of your car, you've already slammed down 6 donuts. So you just let that box sit there because this is shame, you know, no shame day. And so you're just going to sit that box there and you'll get to it later because you go, I really don't want to go in and get shamed for my behavior right there. But because you put so much sugar content in your body, by the middle of the morning, you're starting to just go, man, I'm really hungry. And so you think, man, if it's no shame day, so I think today for lunch, I'm going to like anything fried is sounding really good right now. So it's pizza, it's chicken nuggets, it's French fries, it's whatever I can just devour and just put into my system and just makes me feel really good. So you go back to the office and you're feeling a little fatigued. That mid-afternoon snack is kind of like calling your name because you're thinking, man, I just need something salty right now. And I remember the bag of chips that was out there on the corner in the kitchenette thing. And so I think, you know, there's bowls there, but I'm just going to grab the bag. And you know the rest of the story. You just can't eat one. So you work late. You're headed home. And you think, wow, what could I pick up to be the hero, you know, to take home for dinner tonight? And so you choose Chinese. I mean, there's no calorie content in that, right? And so it's about 10 o'clock at night. It's been your no shame day. You've enjoyed it to the fullest and you think, okay, it's time to go to bed. It's time to think about tomorrow and I'm not going to make the same choices that I made today. But then you look out on the counter and there's that birthday cake sitting there from yesterday. And so you just have to have one, if not two, and you find yourself just kind of collapsing into bed. Reality is you wake up the next morning, you step on the scale like a lot of people do, and you look down and you go, oh, shame. And you're a little bit more self-conscious, and you got a little bit more guilt inside stirring within you, right? But today we're not talking about that external guilt and shame. What we're talking about is the shame that we no longer have to experience that God has demonstrated through his son, Jesus Christ, and understanding what Paul is writing in Romans for us to understand today more completely about this gospel message. You see, there's a scale of justice. It's a picture that's familiar to most of us. It's the scale of justice is when I think sins, small s, and I start putting them over here on this side of the scale, I just think, man, I've got to do something. I've got to do better. I'm not accepted. I've just got to earn somehow God's favor. And then there's this other side that's the reality of it, that God holds it all. And Jesus has given one sacrifice to take on our shame so that we don't have to worry about it anymore. Except for understanding we have freedom now for the gospel to be revealed in our lives. We're going all the way back to chapter 1, Romans. Romans chapter 1, a familiar text for some of you, a brand new text for others. Romans 1, 16 through 17, and we're going to camp out here because there's some powerful things for us to listen to and to respond to today. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God of salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Webster Dictionary defines unashamed as not being ashamed, being without guilt, not having to be self-conscious, no longer having to doubt. What Paul is talking about of being not ashamed of the gospel is that he's now totally convinced in his heart that he's willing to take on whatever may come his direction because without a shadow of a doubt, he is at peace with God because of what Christ has done and the life that he has found through him. What this passage is teaching us is that oftentimes people misinterpret and they think, well, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, so everything's going to go well for me. And yet Paul shows us that being unashamed of the gospel often stirs up shaming behavior on those people who don't understand. So in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 28, Paul shares some of these things that he went through, the shaming that he experienced. Are they servants of Christ? I am a better one. I'm talking like a madman, with far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings and often near death. 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers. In toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is this daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. You see, our minds go to all those horrific things in our minds that Paul went through, that he was shamed for the gospel. But don't miss verse 28. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. You see, Paul had an incredible burden for the church to continue to stay healthy and to thrive, and that lost people would come to understand who Jesus is. And that the church would continue to be revealing God's presence and God's glory and God's sacrifice. That it would draw other people in no matter what it may cost. I don't know about you, but it's easy to just slip into judgment mode sometimes for me. I see sin. I see people choosing sin. I see the sinful behavior and the consequences and the effects of it. And you just think, just let them stay over there. And yet what God is telling us is that we need to be engaged where that sin is. That we need to understand that it is foolishness to them what we believe and why we believe it and why we live in such a way with a hope of the gospel. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18, it says, "The message about the cross doesn't make any sense to lost people. But for those of us who are being saved, it is God's power at work." Do you catch it? The message of the cross doesn't make any sense to lost people. But for those of us being saved, it is God's power at work. It is the revealing that this text is talking about today, that God is at work in each of our lives, that other people will be drawn back to God because of God living in us. Paul saying, in spite of the cultured Greeks who mocked his preaching and said it's foolishness, Paul said, in spite of the Jews that accused him of preaching a false Christ, he says, I'm not ashamed. Why? Because it is the power of God for salvation. There are 2 things you can expect. When we understand the gospel, you can expect that shaming behavior will happen to you or to others because they understand the gospel. But the second thing is that it gives freedom from shame to those who believe it. And there's a difference. And so we stand before God and we have no shame. And even though we have these sins, and even though we're not perfect, he sees us as perfect, and he invites us into such a relationship. We heard it in our communion thought today, Hebrews chapter 12, of the one who took on our shame. The challenge to remind ourselves to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus didn't yield to being shamed because he found it his joy to be focusing on the Father on behalf of me, of you, of us collectively. We live in times where you see people searching out different avenues of spirituality, of different religions, and most people are searching for that significance, and they're thinking, man, I just want access back to God. I just want to know that there's any of these roads that I choose to live on will give me access back to the Father. It's been in generations past, it will be in generations to come. And yet Acts chapter 4, verse 12 says, and there is salvation in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. And his name is Jesus. And on that scale of justice, he's paid it. And he gives us access to the Father. And he invites us into this intimate relationship. You see, verse 16 focuses on our salvation, but don't miss verse 17 of this text. It focuses on God's righteousness now being revealed. Who's it going to be revealed through? Through us. So from our side, being saved from God's wrath is believing. And from God's side, our salvation continuously being lived out draws people back to him. Believing, revealing. They are present tense, continuous action verbs. Present tense, continuous action verbs. These are not words that are just one and done. My belief in God, my faith in God continues to grow, and it continues to develop in its understanding. But also God's revealing through us continues to grow and continues to develop in such a way that we don't even know his timing on certain issues and who he will draw to himself through us. And yet we trust him to be the authority in all things. This text quotes at the end of verse 17, but the righteous man shall live by faith. So why does Paul tuck this in here? Why does he refer back to this prophet of old? We go back and we look at Habakkuk and we know in the day that he lived, God's chosen people, the Israelites, they're choosing idolatry and they're choosing the small s sins again. And Habakkuk's looking out and God is allowing from Babylon, the Chaldeans are rising up, these people that are more wicked than even God's people, and they're on their way. The armies are coming, and they're going to take over. And when Habakkuk looks through with his lenses, all he sees is hopelessness, and he says, God, we're going to be annihilated. We're your children. Habakkuk chapter 2. I am Habakkuk the prophet, and this is the message that the Lord gave me. Habakkuk immediately complains to God. Have you been there? When it doesn't make sense, when you wonder why we have to have the things happen in our world that we live in, here's his complaint. Our Lord, how long must I beg for your help before you listen? Ever been there? How long, God, do I have to beg before you listen to me? How long before you save us from all this violence? Why do you make me watch such terrible injustice? Why do you allow violence, lawlessness, crime, cruelty to spread everywhere? We live in a time, once again, in our world where you see war and you see the effects of war and we hear of Christians who are rising up in their faith and they're being shamed for the gospel. And yet we are convinced that God will continue in his appointed time to draw people to himself. We live in a world that there will always be wars and rumors of wars. There will always be sin and the effects of sin. And so God expects it from even a prophet. God expects it from us at times to just say, how long before you save us from all this violence? Why do you make us watch such terrible injustices? Remember, Habakkuk at first was looking through his lenses. And then he put on the lenses of God. And when we put on the lenses of God, we say, God, you're in control. You've got this. You're the Almighty. You know the timing. You know the purposes that are supposed to happen because of the things that are happening in the world and in our lives. And in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 3 and 4, God tells him to chisel out this vision on stone tablets. He may not be asking us to chisel it out today, but chisel it out and let it chisel into you. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him, but the righteous shall live by his faith. Make sure it's not your heart and your soul that's puffed up inside of you, that you're trying to control all of the experiences and all of the things that are happening around you, but rather have a posture of humility that Habakkuk took on and said, okay, God, I will wait for your timing. I will trust that you will not lie. And by faith, I will live. I will live under the freedom that only comes through your Son. So we're in this series of one. What's the one central mission that God wants us to grasp out of this? It is a personal choice for redemption. It is a personal opportunity for any of us to be able to understand. There's a couple that I want to introduce you to. Sometimes you have to wait lots of years, and the older I get, the more I enjoy at times watching God's thumbprint and his handiwork on how he has put different people in your path and how he brings all things together in his appointed time. 30 plus years ago, my wife was teaching kindergartners at Irving School. She had this little boy, his name was Ryan. He always wore suspenders. He was a cute little dude. And for those of you in education, you know you just can't keep track of all your students. But sometimes you wonder what happened to him. Now fast forward, a few years back, my oldest daughter graduated from nursing. And she went to work at Blessing ER. And it wasn't long and she started talking about this young lady named Erin who was just going through some really difficult times in her life. Fast forward, I get a phone call from Erin. She said, would you consider sitting down with us and doing premarital? I'd like you to meet my fiance, and his name is Ryan. Listen to their story.
I grew up Catholic, raised in a very strong Irish Catholic family. So my faith has always been important to me. We always went to church. When I was young, I felt a very strong pull towards God and the church. And
my parents weren't, they would go on Easter and Christmas. But I regularly went with my grandparents. And then I guess sort of as I grew older, fell away from that.
I'm Erin Bowers.
I'm Ryan Bowers.
And this is our story. I started looking at getting married and I was wanting to get back into the church, and I was met with not the warmest welcome. I hadn't been to church in a while, and it ended up being sort of a hindrance to me. I wanted to go, but I hadn't been going, and I didn't feel like I had done enough to earn, I guess, the right to go. So then when I had my son, my first son, I started going. He and I went to church for about a year, just he and I together. My marriage started kind of falling apart. It was in a bad place, very lonely, very hopeless. In fact, hope was, I avoided it at all costs at that point, because I had hoped so often that things would change and things would get better and been disappointed. So that was really a big changing point for me. I heard Reckless Love by Corey Asbury, and I had never ever heard of that kind of relationship with God or that kind of love from God until I heard that song. And Rick says, well, why don't you do this Connect group? It's a parenting group. I think that you'll really like it. I'm like, well, I don't go to church there. Like, haven't checked all the boxes. I can't just sign up for a group. He said, yeah, you can. It's fine. So I started the group, and it's just been amazing since then. That was in the spring of 2019. And by August, I was fully surrendered, and my mind was just blown and on fire for, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that kind of love existed. And
went through my first marriage. We divorced after several years. And then that's when I met Aaron. And we started coming here together. Just sort of the repetition of coming back week after week. It somehow just changes you. I had this fear, I suppose, that in order to fit in here or to be a part of this church family, you had to know the Bible. I'm a very hands-on physical person. So to understand something that I can't physically put my hands on made for a lot of challenges.
When I was so hopeless before, that hope was always put into other people, and my expectations were put onto other people to fulfill my needs. And what I've realized is that that isn't possible. People will always let you down. I'm imperfect. Everybody's imperfect. I will let other people down. But God is perfect, and that hope, if it's placed in Him, is always fulfilled. And so that's like, now I kind of get that whole thing, because I pull back from this grace that I've received and this love that I don't deserve, that I didn't have to earn, and can extend that then. So that when things are not going my way or kids aren't listening, I just take a breath and think, God's dealt with worse from me. I can deal with this from them, and take myself out of that situation and stop making it about me. And
you know, before I always had an interest, and I would attempt to read the Bible and to just pick it up and attempt to read it. It's nearly impossible, at least for me. You don't know where to start. You don't know what questions to ask or where to go next. And I think the relationships that I've built here at Madison Park have afforded me the opportunity to ask those questions. And while I still don't fully understand it, I now understand that that's okay. That I don't need to fully understand it.
So do you catch it? It's okay. It's okay to fully not understand it or think you need to understand it, but to keep asking the questions and to keep growing in your faith and in your knowledge of the one who makes all the difference in the world. I was sitting with Ryan and Aaron in that first premarital, and we were getting toward the end. And Ryan said, "Can I just ask one question?" And Aaron kind of squirmed. And if you get to know them, she was like, "Oh, what is he going to ask?" And he simply said, "Where do I start? This Bible doesn't make any sense to me. Where do I start?" And you start one step at a time. Romans 1, 16 and 17, our passage that we're looking at today. We've also been encouraged at times in this series just to read through the book of Romans. And when I was reading through the book of Romans, all of a sudden in chapter 5, verses 9 through 11, I'm going, man, Paul is saying this the same way, but just in reverse order. And I mentioned it to Tyler, and I mentioned it to Chuck, and we were just having a little bit of conversation about it, and I go, isn't that how God shows up? That if we don't understand it the first way sometimes on how something is spoken, something that is taught to us, then it just needs to be spoken again, and God knows. So I want you to listen to the Message translation, Romans 1, 16 through 17, and then I want to share with you the Romans 5 passage in reverse order. It's news I'm most proud to proclaim. This extraordinary message of God's powerful plan to rescue everyone who trusts him. Starting with the Jews and then right on to everyone else. God's way of putting people right shows up in acts of faith. Confirming what Scripture has said all along. The person in right standing before God by trusting him really lives. And then Romans 5, 9 through 11, reverse order. Now that we are set right with God by means of the sacrificial death, the consummate blood sacrifice, there is no longer a question of being at odds with God in any way. If when we were at our worst, we were put on friendly terms with God by the sacrificial death of his son, now that we're at our best, just think of how our lives will expand and deepen by means of this resurrection life. Now that we have actually received this amazing friendship with God, we are no longer content to simply say it in plodding prose. We sing and we shout our praises to God through Jesus the Messiah. You see, there's something that happens inside of us. And we say, we're not ashamed of this gospel because it is God now revealing himself through us and through us as the church collectively. It's the scale of justice. Maybe you think you have to do the checklist. Maybe you think you got to take one weight off just to try to balance out to get God's favor. But it is so far from that. And we don't want you to miss that opportunity today. Here is what this is not about. This is not about checklists. This is not about having it all figured out. This is not having to say the right things and act the right way and to be able to have the right conversations. This is not about God's love being conditional based on your behavior and your action. But what is this about? Understanding first and foremost that God's love is unconditional and he is crazy about you. That he invites us to bring our pain and our baggage and our questions and find out that we show up at a place that other people are bringing their pain and their baggage and their questions. And we turn to each other and we say, "You're welcome here." And God is just smiling from heaven and he's saying, "You're welcome here." Realize that none of us have this figured out. Both in that believing and that revealing out of our text today. Action, continuous. From our side, being saved from God's wrath, what a gift. And I just believe and I have faith and I respond to the gospel message and I identify with him in death, burial, and resurrection. But from God's side, do you see how he sees this as a win-win situation? Because he goes, now my salvation is going to continually be lived out among people and my church. He wants to draw people back to himself, and so he's left us with that mission. Today, if you're sitting there and you're thinking, man, I got questions, I don't even know where to begin, then would you find hope from Ryan's testimony? Because here is a friend of mine who's still opening his Bible, who's still taking one step at a time, and he's going, I don't have it all figured out. I don't know what all this means, but I'm going to keep taking a step at a time. And maybe you're like Aaron, and you can look back and you can think of that hour when you first believed and you first understood the gospel. Would you just find great joy in that, and then to realize that God is also giving you a commission today to say, now continue to live out and reveal myself that will draw others in sin back to the Father. You see, as a church, God's intent is that we would be able to stand together and we would say, we're not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of salvation. And we don't want you to leave this place today without coming and talking to one of us. And if you're online, then you reach out to the online host and you set up a time to come and meet with us today. Because we don't want you to miss the opportunity to be unashamed of the gospel and the power that it is working through each of our lives.